Deborah Ann Percy has been writing radio dramas for your listening pleasure on All Ears Theater on WMUK since 2003, expanded for the stage as part of All Ears. Her plays, some written in collaboration with her husband, Arnold Johnston, have won awards, publication, and production nationwide. Debbie has worked in administration for the Kalamazoo Public Schools, but is now a full-time writer. Her short fiction, Cool Front, Stories from Lake Michigan, was published in 2010. But today, we are talking to Debbie about her new short story collection, Invisible Traffic. Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
So tell us about Invisible Traffic. Is there a common theme or connecting thread that runs through this collection?
I think there's several. First of all, they take place in this part of the world, basically Lake Michigan, between here and there. I think people who don't live in this part of the world haven't a clue what a magnificent body of water Lake Michigan is. It's big and cold and dangerous and wonderful. The other is, these are stories about women. Women and their children. There are some wonderful women writers who write stories from a woman's point of view, but too often, I think, a woman has to be a bad mother to be the subject of a literary story. I don't think that's true. I think being a good mother, making the decisions you have to make to be a good mother and make your children safe and healthy is just as hard.
Oh, definitely. So in reading Invisible Traffic, I was struck that your style is of a storyteller, maybe less descriptive, and then I remembered you're a playwright a lot of the time. How do you choose in which direction to go? Is something going to be a play, or is it going to be a story, or do they sometimes cross over?
They often cross over. I find that sometimes I start a story and it turns into just dialogue back and forth and back and forth. Recently, I took a play start that Arnie and I had done and am turning it into a short story, which may help us go back and find out where the play should go. So it's what the story wants to be, whether it's a play or the things that you can do on the stage, of course, that you can't do in a short story. And there are obviously things in a short story because you can talk about what people are thinking, how they feel about other people. All that has to come out in action, which is dialogue and physical action on the stage. So
do you have a preference for one or the other, or is it like a different writer comes into play?
I don't think I do have a preference. Sometimes I find plays easier. Arnie and I have collaborated for years, and the nice part of that is when you don't know what comes next, we hand it to each other. I like to say he writes the hard parts, but he's kind enough to say that about me. So there is a difference. Sometimes plays are easier just because, I don't know, they're easier for me, but I really like short stories too.
Okay. And as you said, you collaborate with your husband a great deal. Do you miss that, or is it refreshing to go on your own path when
we collaborate all the time on everything. I think Arnie writes fiction and poetry. I don't write poetry at all. I have no gift for poetry. So we write our own things. I think part of being a successful collaboration is to be successful on your own so that you don't feel like, well, I'm the big guy here, or, well, they're carrying me. You have to feel equal and to be a successful collaborator.
Yeah. You've taught creative writing at Western Michigan University, at Kalamazoo College, Kalamazoo Community College. What are a writer's most important lessons?
Oh, obsession. I don't know whether that's a lesson or not. I was reading, actually, in the New Yorker, an old article just before we came about, or maybe it was in the Gazette today, about writers having a schedule. And that's the way I work. It's not the way Arnie works. That if you get up every day, many writers got up at a certain time, had exactly the same breakfast. They were not creative about their schedules at all. And then that allowed them to be creative in a different way. Chekhov, all sorts of wonderful, wonderful writers had a schedule every day.
So what inspires you? What makes a great story?
That's a really hard question. I think things stick in people's heads, in writers' heads. There's an image. They hear somebody say something. They overhear something. A fascination. We have a play about the Romanovs called Rasputin in New York. I've been fascinated by the Romanovs, as many people are, for years. It's just, and something strikes you. I have on my iPhone, on my little yellow pad, a list of the awful things people say, just because you forget
them. Well, that's
wonderful. You forget them, and you know the grammatical strangeness that comes out of people's mouths, and use them someday.
Yeah. So as I read your stories, I have to say, Debbie, you're something of a tease. A lot of these endings, it's like, well, I think I know where this is going, but I'm not entirely sure. So there's a bit of a cliffhanger at the end of these, or maybe I'm missing something.
Oh,
but...
well, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. Sometimes I think in life we don't know where things are going.
That's true. Yeah. So... now, it's the variety that strikes me, too, in this collection, that a lot of these stories, when I was looking for a common thread, there's a terrific variety, which I think is wonderful. Your imagination seems to be inspired by many different types of stories. There's a husband who drops a wife off at a store and then just disappears. A child who swims dangerously far, baking apple pies, one night stands, domineering friends. I mean, it's usually with writers you see one type of a theme, but you have a wonderful variety.
I think the theme is invisible traffic, actually. I think the theme between all the stories is that we're all doing the best we can. We aren't always successful, but there is a lot of invisible traffic out there waiting to get us, and that's pretty much what happens to these people. They're different people, but doing the best they can in the middle of traffic. So,
which was a very intriguing story. I enjoyed the title story, which was the grand finale on this.
And thank you.
I think I know how it finished, but again, you know, you kind of leave that reader some room for imagination there, that possibly you could finish off the story in your own mind as you please. But anything like that ever happened to you?
This invisible
kind of bad
traffic?
Karma and cars out of nowhere?
Absolutely. I think it's absolutely true. And my friend, who is the friend with the hair in that story, just loves that title because it's true. Something's on your mind, your life is in some sort of disarray, and you pull out and you didn't see the car coming. And I think that happens quite often in traffic and in other places, that when your life becomes more difficult, more consumed, more intense,
yeah,
that there, in real life, in actual real life, not a metaphor, there is invisible traffic.
Yeah. I could relate to it. So do you have some appearances? You have a book launch that is coming up. Tell us about the book launch.
One Wet Shoe, the wonderful publishing company I'm working with, is having a book launch in Kalamazoo on November 1st. November 2nd, I'll be reading at the Portage Public Library. They're doing a day-long in-service for people who want to be writers and how to be a writer.
Ah.
December 12th. One Wet Shoe is having a reading in Ludington. I have, in the middle of October, a reading coming up at the Michigan News Agency. Dean Houck is such a wonderful supporter of writers and artists, and she's just a lovely lady. So that's sort of what's coming.
All right, a lot. You're going to be busy.
I am.
So if you could read a short excerpt from your book so we can hear something of your voice.
I would be delighted. I'm going to read from the middle of a story called The Woman Who Loved Paul Simon. I should say before I go on, I think there are not a lot of people who write from a woman's point of view with great sympathy about the common things women do and make it literary. And I think Paul Simon does that. Mm. I think he writes songs about children that are just breathtakingly true and beautiful. So I'm not sure I thought of all that when I named the story that, but the more I think about it, the more it's true. This is about a woman who has a place at Lake Michigan. Her husband has gone back to Chicago. She's on the beach by herself. She's met a man and they've gone out to dinner. And they're sitting in some classy place on Lake Michigan. There are lots of classy places there, and they hear music. And she says, it's Paul Simon, his song. Somebody has done something terrible to it. Can you hear it? You recognize it? The tune? Excuse me. In her mind, she hears Paul Simon singing, I roll in your arms and your voice is the heat of the night. As always, the line creates a hollow place in her chest. Aloud, she says, it's how the heart approaches what it yearns. For, he says. What? For, he repeats, what it yearns for. The grammar's off. She waits a moment before responding. I suppose it is. But they've taken his song and made it all violins and soft notes. They've taken away what makes it so wonderful. Seems all right, he says, for dinner. It's dinner music. The waitress moves their salad plates aside and places their entrees in front of them. I don't mean to rush you, she says, but your fish was ready and it's best if it doesn't sit under the lights. But it isn't dinner music. Allison smiles and speaks slowly because she knows she's no longer on safe ground with him. Paul Simon's songs have words about being alone, about giving up trying to find someone to trust. That wouldn't be much good for dinner. Allison stirs her coffee. She wants to tell him how wrong he is, how the music is good for everything because it's true. But then the evening will end shortly after dinner. She smiles, as she does for Rob's clients. How's the redfish? Everyone says it's good here.
Thank you, Debbie. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much.